Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Railway Mania. On this podcast, we could be accused of focusing on the technical aspects of rail travel, but here is a story that's a little bit different. With me today is the talented composer and performer, Cheryl B. Engelhardt. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Your latest album, The Passenger, is intrinsically linked to trains and railways. Could you explain a little bit about why?
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose. but specifically why is because I wrote and produced it entirely on a cross-country train trip across America.
Which is pretty epic.
it's pretty epic. It's the first album of its kind. There have been poetry books and photography books, and people have written songs on the album, on the train, but not actually turned it into the album while on the train. So I had headphones, I had a little keyboard, everything is sort of synthetic. I did have a few collaborators that I sent them a bass track, and then Lily Hayden played violin. I had Sangeeta Kaur, she's an amazing Grammy-winning opera singer, sang some lines on top of it. So they did that at home and sent it back to me while I was on the train. So we got to collaborate. But everything you hear that I created on the train is electronic. Technically, I had finished writing it in the first 5 days. I went from New York to Los Angeles, and then I was going to fly home, stay with my sister for a few days in Los Angeles and fly home, but I canceled my flight and took the train back because I just loved it so much. So I did a lot of editing and tweaking on the way back. So the whole thing really, I would say, was done in the 9 days that I was on the train.
I think replacing the flight for rail travel is music to the ears of a lot of podcast listeners to this. Let me rewind a little bit. So where did the idea for making an album on a train come from?
It came out of a sort of a joke. I was looking to purchase flights to go from New York, where I live, to Los Angeles to attend the Grammys. So this is December of 2021, and I was looking at flights, and they were so expensive, and it was supposed to be the end of January, so I had like a month and a half, and I was like, oh, they're so expensive, I'm just going to take a train. And I didn't even know that was a thing. I love trains. I've toured in Switzerland and Germany on trains, and I live on the Hudson River in New York, and it's like an hour and a half train ride along the Hudson River to New York City, which I take regularly. I've always loved trains. I had a train set when I was a kid, but I didn't have like this obvious obsession with it. It wasn't like, I have a hobby and it's trains.
not my level of obsession, but yeah, that's fine.
Exactly. Well, but you know, my dad and grandfather, they're all engineers, not with trains, but there was this kind of like, I don't know, it was just a subconscious kind of love for that kind of travel. It's also the only mode of travel where I do not get nauseous in some way. Like I get car sick easily. I was a marine biologist in college, and which you would think I could be on any kind of boat and not get seasick. Not true.
That's tragic.
it's really tragic. Hence the shift to music. But yeah, so I was just like joking about, I should take a train. And then I actually like went down a little rabbit hole. I was like, what if I did? And I discovered that there are rooms and there's meals and like this whole sort of culture. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what an idea. So I ended up booking the train ride out just for my own little bit of a vacation. Early January, they canceled the Grammys. It was like a peak of COVID. So they postponed until April. And that same week, one of my best friends who I've collaborated with and wrote a musical with passed away from cancer.
That's horrible.
It was really awful, and it was exhausting. And it was, you know, it had been like a year of knowing, but also it went really fast at the end. And so it was like a year of hope. And I just felt so exhausted and so deflated. And so like, what's the point? Why should I even go? I was meant to leave. And I think it was 12 days after I had found out both of those things. And I was like, well, now there's no point. But something told me to keep the ticket. I was like, what if I made a record? What if I tried to do some music? And I wasn't planning on doing a record this year, because last year and the year before I came out with a new age album each year, both did really well and were on charts and on all these meditation apps. And I was like, great. Like I don't need to do another album. Normally I wait a couple years between album cycles, and those two just kind of like popped out easily. But I had this thought, and then I couldn't, like the train thing, I couldn't let it go. You know, my father passed away 9 years ago, and so many people were like, oh, you're a musician, you're going to write so many songs about him. And like, zero songs. I loved him. He was my biggest audience member. Our connection was music. He was a jazz bassist. Like, wow. No songs, zero songs. So I was like, why do I think that I'm going to suddenly be inspired now after Kevin's death? And
just to confirm, Kevin was your friend who passed away
just a few weeks before I went on this trip. which was just a couple months ago now. So I kind of was like, let's see what happens, you know? So on the train ride itself, you know, I had big emotions. I was dealing with this grief that I had never lost a friend my age before. Mm. This was very different. It was very different than losing my father, who had been sick for years and years and years. And it was, it's just a different, you know, a partnership and that collaborator kind of person. And so I had a lot of big emotions. I had a lot of dreams with him. And then so in the mornings, I would get up and I would write. You can tell on the album the songs that I had written in the morning on the train because they're a little more somber. And then throughout the day, just being inspired by the scenery was so, you know, 1 hour you're in plains and cows and then like 4 hours later, there's snow. And I mean, it was end of January, you know, so, and we went through the Rocky Mountains and the Colorado River was frozen, like right to the left there. I saw like hundreds of elk crossing this frozen Colorado River. Like you just can't, like, you don't see stuff like that.
Amazing.
Being inspired by the landscape and by these big emotions, I think those two elements together made it really easy to write this record.
Have you ever taken a trip like this before? You said that you've toured on trains before, but have you ever done anything of this length of time or
no.
distance?
No, I have. When I've toured with my band, like performed in a bunch of different cities around Switzerland and Germany, getting through Europe, specifically Switzerland and Germany on trains is so easy. So, you know, we're on a train for 3 hours, 5 hours, 9 hours, never overnight.
Oh, wow.
But oftentimes with a lot of gear and, you know, you sort of have to get comfortable with trains, platforms and reading signs quickly. And, you know, that there's a whole culture, even if you're not traveling overnight. So I felt like I had this familiarity and ease with traveling on trains, but the overnight distance experience was definitely the first for me and 100% not the last.
Yeah. And America's not noted for its passenger rail travel really, since domestic airlines and freeways kind of took over in sort of mid 20th
right.
century.
Right.
So I was amazed that you could actually do this trip. I wasn't even aware that it was still going on, that you could actually go coast to coast.
You can go. There are four main different ways you can go. Most of them from the East Coast, you go east about 19 hours, and you end up in Chicago, and you pretty much have to change in Chicago, or if you're coming from the very south, New Orleans. And then from there are three or four different routes that go pretty much straight to California. One goes much further north through Glacier National Park, which apparently is beautiful. That's the Empire Builder train and ends up in Seattle. The one I took was just a little south and went across through the Rocky Mountains, ended up in Sacramento, California. And then I took a down the coast of California down to Los Angeles. There's another one, and this is the one I took home, which goes kind of, if you were to draw a straight line from Los Angeles to Chicago, it goes through Arizona, a little more desert. I love the scenery there, but, you know, it was a lot of big red rocks and sort of desert scenery, a lot of flat lands. But it definitely felt like I was looking at it versus being in the Rocky Mountains. I felt like I was part of the scenery. Like I felt like,
yeah,
there are 47 tunnels that we went through. The train is, and the train tracks, and the train, it is part of the scenery in that particular route, which I thought was really, really interesting.
And I'm glad you mentioned 47 tunnels, because we have a very tech-centric audience on here. So I want to go through some stats with you.
I can get techie. I learned some train stuff. Yes.
So 47 tunnels. How many days traveling?
Technically, it was 5 days out and then 4 days back. I took the slightly shorter route on the way back.
And how many times did you have to change trains?
On the way out, I switched in Chicago and then I switched in Sacramento. And that's it.
Brilliant.
And on the way back, I was LA to straight to Chicago. I only switched one time.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So it was technically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different trains over the 9 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about scenery.
Yeah.
How did what you saw and experienced on the journey and the different places you were going through influence the different tracks on the album?
Yeah, I saw so many birds. I saw, and in my one of my dreams that I had where Kevin was there, I was like, how am I going to know when you visit me? And I asked that many times in many dreams. And like the last day, he actually said, well, I'm going to be a bird, of course. So that was like the 9th day of the train travel. And I had already seen, I saw like dozens of bald eagles and big vulture type things and like lots of robins and cardinals and bright colored birds. And I just was really, really touched by all of the birds. There's this one track called The Two Feathers.
I was going to say The Two Feathers. I was going to say, I was literally... it's on my notes here. I was going to say the Two Feathers is really dreamlike.
Yeah.
And that comes after the Misty Cosmos, which like has quite a sort of dark and brooding tone to it.
You totally got it. Two Feathers was kind of this idea of just like two souls kind of dancing around. And I mean, completely inspired by birds. I mean, the funny thing about these tracks is there's no lyrics on any of them. I mean, there's light lyrics on one track way in the background, but because they don't have words, it's not like the obvious song chorus where it's like, I love you, baby. And then you name the song, I love you, baby, because you hear it 19 times. It was really kind of, I named all the tracks after the fact. I actually had my fans help me. I sent them a couple snippets from some of the songs and said, you know, what imagery comes to mind? What do you feel? And they helped me name the Misty Cosmos, actually, because I didn't have a name for that.
Oh, that's really sweet.
But the Two Feathers came to me while I was on the train, and that piece came to me when I was going through more of the plains and sort of desert. And I love the idea of like traditional flute sounds that are really grounded in the earth, whether it's from Asia or Native American. I just like, there are, like when you hear a flute, it really connects you to nature, to me at least. You hear that a lot in spas and things like that for a reason.
Yeah, definitely.
I reached out to Sherry Finzer, who is one of the world class, like if you ever gone to a spa and heard a flute, that was probably her playing it. And I was so grateful that she said yes to, because it was a fast turnaround. I'm like, listen, I'm on a train. Can you wing this and get this back to me? So here's the track that I created. And she played two. She's like, I did a bass flute and an alto flute, like pick whichever one you like. And I was like, oh no, I like them both so much. So it's sort of just really, there was this theme of two. So I felt like I would have the two parts that she gave me weave in and out of each other. And so the Two Feathers, it kind of just...
And they dance with each other, just like you're saying, the sort of dance of two people.
Two souls, two feathers actually like literally falling because, you know, from birds flying around. I mean, it could be literal or it could also just be that like... You just see this sort of peace with the feather falling to the floor. So
amazing.
Yeah.
And you speak a lot about the Rockies and the epic scenery that you went through there. How did that influence? Which tracks did that influence in which way?
Kind of influenced no tracks because I literally had to take my headphones off and put my computer down and just put like my face was glued.
That's the break in the middle of the album.
Yeah, my face was glued to the window. I cried tears of awe when we came around this corner and it just, the mountains opened up and we were right in it. Like the photos I have, I'm so grateful that my room was on there are two floors, you know, you could go upstairs or downstairs in the sleeper cars. I was so grateful that my room was on the bottom floor because anytime we had a quick stop where you're allowed to get off for about 5 minutes and get back on fresh air break, I would go out with wet paper towels and wipe my window down so I could have this like streak free experience. So I would say that there are some more epic tracks and I'm sure that scenery was like embedded in me somehow musically, but it was the one time where I was like, I can't be looking at my computer. I knew I had a deadline. I knew I had to just sit down and do the work. But I also was like, yeah, no, I have to be really present. This is,
well, it's also a top tip to anyone doing that journey is to take paper towels to wipe down the windows.
Yeah, that's so total. Like so many people were like, oh, you come do mine. Like some of the Amtrak workers were like, are we paying you? And like all of the jokes. And I'm like, y'all laugh now, but wait till you have streaks on your photos and mine are perfect.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
laugh it up. But that's, pro tip for sure. Bring a little towel or washcloth or a little spray bottle of Windex and you'll have a perfect, perfect windows.
So a lot of your previous work has been centered around piano music and vocals, but how is The Passenger different to that?
Seeing as I definitely didn't want to disturb the other passengers with any live instruments or me singing or anything like that, this was such a departure from me as a piano player who I play, you know, acoustic pianos normally, like real big pianos, and I use the piano, my record Luminary, it's just piano and voice, but you'll hear things that sound like violins and synthesizers because I'm plucking the strings on the piano and tapping and like doing all sorts of stuff. Like I really use the whole instrument. So this was a really, going back to my roots when I was studying film scoring music where everything was electronic and you're just using computer sounds. And essentially I had this little teeny tiny keyboard that I could play. It was like a piano, tiny little piano. I would play it. If you were just sitting in the room with me, you wouldn't hear anything because I had headphones on. So all of the sound was coming from my computer. So I'd play on the piano, tell my computer, okay, I want that to be this like a wah, wah, wah synth sound or a kind of cosmic sound. Or I could tell it to be a trumpet or a flute. So I would tell it what sound I want it to be. And then I would hear that back through my headphones. So essentially there was no one could tell I was actually composing any music if you were just looking at me. You couldn't hear anything. So knowing that there was going to be noise on the train and I didn't want to be a source of noise on the train. It was my first like totally electronic ambient album, which was really exciting. It's a very male-led space. So to have composed and produced and I mixed the record myself and my master engineer was a woman and all of the featured artists are women. So it was a really, and it wasn't super on purpose. I wasn't trying to like make a huge statement, but it was kind of cool to kind of have this different perspective in that genre.
Absolutely. And you said also about you had one compartment to yourself. Is that right?
I did. Yeah, they call them roomettes. So they have roomettes, they have bedrooms, which are bigger, and then they have like family rooms. So basically what it is, you walk into this car and it's kind of like Harry Potter style. There's two seats facing each other, mm-hmm. enough for two people. So they're just wide enough for one person to face another person, little table in between. And at night, an attendant comes and turns that bottom chair, the two chairs, into a bed and then a fold down top bunk. So if I had someone else, that we could have both slept on two different bunks.
Right, right.
I did learn two nights in that the top bunk, the higher you are on the train in general, the more wobbly it is.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because you're further away from the wheels, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're a sensitive sleeper, like I am, you want to sleep closer to the bottom. And I also learned that the top bunk is 2 inches narrower than the bottom bunk. And I'm like tall and skinny. So like, I was like, I'll be fine. But the 2 inches makes such a difference. And the feeling of like, I'm not going to fall off.
Yeah.
So two nights in, I was like, I wonder if I would sleep better if I slept on the bottom. So I just had the attendant make up the bottom bed. Well, at that point I had switched trains. So I was able to sort of experiment with a new setup. I just had him keep the bed the same. I didn't have him the next day. He came and offered to put it back into two seats. And I was like, I'm just going to sit up like as if I was working, sitting up in bed and spread out a little bit and folded the top bunk up. So I had more headroom and it just felt a little less claustrophobic. And that was the way for me to go. I thought I would use the top bunk to put all my stuff on it, but I really, my room was right next to the luggage rack. So I really didn't need to keep all my stuff in my room, which you normally have to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that makes sense. And they're roomettes, so they're quite small and you're in there on yes. your own. So how did you find that as a creative space to be in?
I mean, I kind of looked at, like, I did a lot of preparation. I brought an entire duffel bag specifically to really make it a little oasis. So I saw this Instagram little reel that Amtrak did on their official Amtrak page, which is, you know, the train company. It was like a roomette and then someone did a snap and then it was like there were blankets and like little Christmas lights sort of things. And I was like, all right, game on. So I brought throw pillows and blankets. I brought little extra lights. I had a candle. I had like some crystals. Like I got all new agey with it. And so I had this.
Very appropriate. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I made it a nice space. I liked being in there a lot. I did go to they have an observation car that is for anyone on the mm-hmm. train, whether you're in a sleeper car or in coach. And that's, you know, got the glass sort of all the way up and around the ceiling,
amazing.
Which was cool. So I did that when it wasn't too crowded. Again, this was like in the peak of one of the COVID peaks. So everyone had masks on and it was fine. But when it got too crowded, I just felt like it made more sense to go to the room. And I also went to the dining car, which was only accessible for people that were in the sleepers.
Right.
And when those weren't too crowded, those were also nice to sit in. But sometimes you could take your meals there or you could have the attendant bring them to you if it was too crowded or there wasn't room. So that was extra special little, it was kind of amazing to travel. Normally travel is so exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, I treat travel as just like, I just have to get there the fastest way. Like, I just have to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily enjoy the journey. I don't really care about enjoying the journey. I just want to get to the destination as quickly as I can.
This is so the opposite. And to be able to like I was getting itchy. You know, I work from home. I always have worked from home. So COVID, not COVID, I have my studio in my house. And I was, you know, had just been dealing with my best friend dying. And so I wanted to get out of my skin. I wanted to get out of my space. I wanted to like feel something new, but I also was so exhausted from all of that.
Right.
And to be able to just literally sit in your own bed in this room and have people bring you food, but also watch the entire country go by at 80 miles an hour. I was like, this is like literally like resting while moving.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of another example.
Well, it's a hotel. I guess it's a hotel on wheels, isn't it? Like it's yes, it's a small room, but you get the best view ever.
Yeah, is that like what a cruise is like? Cruises have always freaked me out, but maybe that's what the appeal is, where you can kind of rest, but also go somewhere and see things in the process. But that's probably the closest example. But this was that for sure.
Amazing. And then did you get to talk to any of your fellow passengers about your project? And what did they say if you did?
Yeah, so it's so funny. Because of COVID, I definitely had this, like, I'm not interested in talking close to anybody. The trains were noisy. You know, there's this constant low rumbling. So you kind of can't talk at a low volume. You have to really kind of get in there with the conversation.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I've had read ahead of time, like, so many people are so inspired by other people's stories, and so many books and poems and even songs have been written about other people's travels, who you come across on trains. But I had my big emotions. I had the scenery. I felt like those two things were enough inspiration for me. And I really felt like I wasn't in a space where I wanted to talk to anybody. I really didn't. But I did join a couple Facebook groups, Amtrak fans and train fans and things, and sort of shared, hey, I'm doing this. I had created a page for people to follow the journey, sign up for my email list, listen to some music, and, you know, follow the literal little actual train on the map as I was going. On the app I had set up. So, you know, I had posted a little bit, and I got such a beautiful response from people. And someone actually posted on the group, like, hey, I think I see you in the observation car with your keyboard. You look really focused. I also have social anxiety. So just know that I wanted to say hi, and hi. This is me saying hi. And, like, there were several people like, I saw you too. So, like,
that's
digitally.
Amazing. That's so sweet.
It was so sweet, and it was totally perfect, and it was exactly what I wanted, because I really wouldn't have wanted to have been pulled out of whatever flow I was in. I wouldn't have wanted to, like, sit and try to have a conversation with masks on with the rumbling. It would have just been frustrating, I think. Mm. But that effort and that's being seen was, and me seeing them and writing back, and it was, you know, it was a really lovely interaction that happened digitally in real life. It's like, wait, what? Yes, it did.
That's really cool. And I also, I'm in awe of the fact that you actually told everybody as you were going along, because that really, you know, you've got a hard deadline.
Yeah.
And then you're publicizing that fact. I think that's the thing that would make me the most anxious, is just that I've got to finish this album. So in those terms, so it is often said that a deadline focuses the mind. Mm. You set yourself the challenge of finishing the album on the train. And that involved getting the train back as well. So did this plan change during the trip? And how did you find dealing with that hard deadline of the end of the journey?
It's a great question. So I got on the train at 5 o'clock in the evening, mm-hmm. and then I needed to switch in Chicago, you know, 19 hours later. So I guess it was like noon or something the next day. So I was like, let's see what I can do in this, just in this first leg, no pressure. And I got 3 tracks pretty much done in that time. So I was like,
that's all that pent-up creativity inside you just bursting out there, yeah.
Yeah, so right in the first 24 hours, I knew I was going to be fine. And my definition of the album was the Recording Academy's definition, which was 30 minutes of music or more than 5 tracks. I was mm-hmm. aiming for 7. I ended up writing 12. There are 9 on the record, because 3 of them were just the poops. So, which happens when you're just plowing through. So I knew I was going to be fine within 24 hours. So that was really great. It took a lot of pressure off, just knowing that I could crank this out and it was coming easily. I mean, I used to work in advertising where it's like, okay, we need this kind of music and we need it yesterday. So I've always been a fast composer. I've always been able to just sit down and write, even if I'm not feeling inspired. Like, I don't experience writer's blocks. I mean, there are times when I feel inspired and I have an idea that came out of nowhere, but I'm never scared that I can't sit down and write. So I thought I would be okay. And then in the first, you know, 24 hours, I kind of proved myself.
Yeah,
and
smashed out an EP on the first journey. So
yeah. And there was a moment when I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. But then I was like, oh, wait, I have this backlog of, you know, tracks that I've already done. So there were moments when I was like, I can't, I need a break. And, you know, like when I wanted to glue my face to the window to watch the Rockies go by, and, you know, when I saw the ocean in California, like, definitely moments where I felt like it was okay to step away from the music.
Did your plan change during the trip at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when I got off in Chicago, I had this, like, low-grade nausea. And I was like, oh, man, I thought I was good on trains. But, like, it was, you know, my first 19 hours rocking back and forth. And I was walking through Chicago, and I did not sleep well at all. I'm a light sleeper, and the train's honking every hour, and the movement, and, you know, the dreams with Kevin popping in. Like, it was just, like, a lot. And so just that exhaustion and low-grade movement nausea, and I thought that the station was, like, moving. I thought we were in an earthquake, because it was, like, my body was still, like, rocking back and forth, but the station wasn't. I was like, oh, this is going to be... I was like, well, I can deal with anything for 4 days, like, no big deal. We're a day into it. And so then I boarded the train again. And once I got settled on the California Zephyr, and that's the train that goes through the Rockies from Chicago to Sacramento. Once I got on that train and really got settled in, that was the longest leg I would be on. I would be on that for 3 nights and really set my room up as fast as I could so I could just sit down and be like, all right, drink some water, like what's happening. And within an hour of that, like it all settled and it kind of like all clicked. And I was like, I just had this feeling. I was like, I know I'm going to be done with this album in the five days, but I feel like I'm going to need more time, not for the writing, but for something else, like for this journey, for the processing, for the rest, for the emotion. I don't know what, but that, so that's when between Chicago and Denver, when I knew I still had like somewhat reception, that's when I called the airline. I called Amtrak to see if I could get a train back, called the airline to cancel the flight, called my sister to make sure she could drive me to the train, like all of this, like just dealing with logistics, like anytime there was a stop, because you know, reception is really hard when you're moving that fast to keep it solid. And Wi-Fi was not a thing.
Yeah, communication is difficult. Yeah,
the whole plan back changed from Chicago to Denver when I was like, I kind of had settled in and was like, I see what's here for me, but I don't know what it is yet, and I want to make sure I give myself enough time to see what it is.
And would you say that was those first 24 hours the hardest bit in terms of the journey?
Yeah, definitely. Just physically, kind of getting used to the space. I think my body was like, hey, what's happening? We're normally cool on trains, but this is like a really extra, super long time on this train. So I feel like a little shaky. Are we nauseous? I don't know if we're nauseous. Like, what do we do with food? The food, the east of Chicago is like not great. As soon as you get west of Chicago, the dining situation completely changes. So that was a pleasant surprise the first 24 hours. So yeah, I would say the first 24 hours, I was like, I wonder how this is going to go.
What have I let myself in for?
Yeah. At the same time, I'm like, it's only a couple days. It's less than a week. Like I can handle anything. And then, it turned out to be a total dream. But, it's interesting because Amtrak came in. Amtrak is a government funded company that came in 1971, was formed in 1971 to save the dying private passenger industry. So passenger trains were a big thing. And then, obviously the planes and highways and infrastructure really kind of took over in America. So that's what Amtrak was formed for. And so, on the East Coast, going up and down from New York down to, DC, the East Corridor, I think they call it, Amtrak actually owns the land that the trains go through. But when you get to the West, most of the rest of the company, the tracks are owned by freight trains, which is still, a big booming industry is freight train movement. So, there are a couple of times you have to wait because the freight trains get right of way because they own the tracks. So I have some cool pictures where it's literally a Y in the tracks and we're just about to get to where the two sides turn into one track and this huge freight train is just barreling through. Like, you are definitely stopping, little passenger train, to let us
get out of my way.
The big barrel, like looks like oil barrel, sort of black matte painted, they're kind of beautiful against the white snowy mountains in the background. But and we never had major delays on my train. You hear all these horror stories and they make up the time. We had a 2-hour delay and we still ended up at the next station, whatever that was, pretty much on time. It was very impressive to like sit. And of course I was like, yay, the longer we sit, the more time I have to write. And I only went to the bathroom. I only went to the bathroom or took showers when we were standing still. I learned that in the first 24 hours too, that I think showering on a moving train should be an Olympic sport. And I'm not sure how more people don't die, honestly.
Okay.
I was like, why would anyone do this when the train is moving?
But now you say that, that's what I really want to try.
Oh no, that's going to come back to me. So many people are going to have concussions because of this podcast.
I wanted to ask you, if you could go back and have one of those days on the train back and do it again, which one would it be?
Denver to Sacramento. That's when you go from the plains and then you're climbing and you start going through the tunnels and you start seeing the wildlife and you start being part of that scenery. And I think no matter what side of the train you're on, you're seeing amazing things. It's the energy on the train, you can just tell everyone was just so connected with what we were seeing, which is just nature. I mean, the conductor was like, there's a bald eagle ahead, there's a wolf over there. Like, you know, he would get on the, like, just everyone, no matter how many times you see that, I feel like you can't get, I just heard it in the conductor's voice. This is his, like, what, 1,000th time doing this, and it's still like, everybody on our left, we've got a herd of elk. So it's amazing. I would do that definitely. If you told me I had to do that every day for a year, I would do it.
Fantastic. Coming to the end of this interview, but I think my personal highlight of the album was The Zephyr Remembers, which has this amazing vocal on it from Sangeeta Kaur. But do you have a favorite track from the album?
That's an amazing track simply because of what Sangeeta brings.
It's kind of haunting and inspiring and epic at the same time. And yeah, it's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, and the Zephyr was the name of that train that went through the Rockies. Mm-hmm. So
I think also that's probably why I liked it as well.
Yeah.
I'm very shallow.
I think that the first two tracks are really special to me. The Beautiful Bridge, which actually was not named because of a bridge I saw, although a lot of people think that it has to do with, you know, all the many bridges that we went across, not as many as the tunnels we went through, but many bridges, but it had nothing to do with the bridges. That was actually one of the few tracks on the album that I named before I even wrote it, and it came out of a conversation that a friend of mine, Lily Hayden, who is a Grammy winning new age artist and violin player and vocalist, she called me right after she had found out that Kevin had passed away, and had this really lovely conversation about her relationship with her mother, who has since passed, and just how now that you have someone that you love that much in the other realm, whatever that is for you, you now have this bridge to that other realm. And it's a beautiful bridge. And I just love that phrase, and I love the sentiment behind it, and just like the lightness and, you know, that she said it with. And so when I asked her to play on this piece that I had already written on the train, it kind of had a section and then they had this weird departure section musically, and then it came back to the first section, almost like that weird little middle section was a bridge, and it just felt all too perfect. And then she gave me this violin track. I asked her to play violin on it because that's what she's world renowned for, and she's also like, I'm gonna do a vocal track too, I just hear a thing. So you hear this haunting ooh ah in the way background, and that's her, and it just got a lot of emotions in it, and I think it's just one of the most beautiful things I've collaborated on. So I would say that one, and then The Light that's left, that was the first track I wrote on the entire train trip, and I think it has a lot of space, which you listen to me talk, a lot of my past music is similar. Like I like to put a lot of notes in. I love playing the classical, the fast music.
Yeah.
This is like the opposite of that. The Light That's Left, it lingers and there's space and there's feelings. So those two pieces really like did exactly what I wanted them to do.
It sounds like it's an extremely personal journey for you as well, which I think is reflected in the album. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's lovely. You shared a few of your tips. So just to wrap up, do you have any advice for listeners thinking about making a similar journey?
Yes, definitely.
Is the first one, do it.
Yeah. You don't need as much pillows and blankets. The pillows and blankets, if you take an Amtrak cross-country train trip, are delightful. They just redid them all. They're not, I thought I was going to get like a felt square washcloth to sleep with, but they had really nice, so I did not need to bring a whole duffel bag of throw blankets and pillows. So save yourself on that. They provide you with whatever you need and extras, and they're delightful about it. Two, if your train trip is anything besides very point A to point B, call someone. Call, like, the person that ended up doing my booking, I should have named a song after her, Letitia, because I was like, I want a room where there's not a lot of foot traffic, that's not near a bathroom. And I think looking at, I looked at the floor plans for all the sleeper cars. I was like, I think I want room 2. She's like, girl, you want room 11. And I was like, okay. And
you need someone with that knowledge. You need somebody who can recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was like totally on my side. So get on the phone, become their friend. If you have a somewhat complicated or you have strange requests and you can't figure out how to do it online, like, don't be afraid to get on the phone with them. I'm trying to get Amtrak to use one of these tracks as the hold music, but they're not replying to me. So,
well, fingers crossed. Where can people buy The Passenger?
Thank you so much. CBEmusic.com is my website, and it has access to all the places you could buy it. But wherever you love to purchase music, it is there.
I got mine from iTunes. because I'm old school.
Yeah, it's on iTunes. Thank you. iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, if you're a stream person. But yeah, I very much appreciate that. And straight from on my website.
Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us your story about, you know, creativity and an epic journey and such a personal one as well.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.